Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. It's Two for Tuesday, so get your requests in. Two for Tuesday, one artist, two songs. You pick them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for Two for Tuesday. We're going to be talking about businesses that no longer exist. They're closing down some Kmarts around town. And then we were going to talk about some other places that we used to go to that are no longer around and reminisce a little bit about that. Plus, much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, normally we talk with my next guest every couple of weeks on a Thursday morning, every other Thursday morning. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him, by the way, on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. But, you know, since the Emmys were Sunday night, we wanted to get his thoughts on everything Emmy-related, from the show itself to the winners, the losers, the surprises, the snubs, all of that stuff. And we love talking TV with Dan Feinberg. Again, you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's bring Dan in. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
I'm okay, because if we're talking, that means that the week must be nearly over.
Well, it's only Tuesday. We fooled you a little bit this time. So.
Oh, man. Well, it's Thursday in my mind.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. We got to talk about the Emmys. That's why you're here. That's why we have you here on a Tuesday. Overall, let's see. I got to say, I was surprised at how many winners deserve to win. Quite frankly, that was the one thing I took away from it. There were some genuine surprises in major categories, and that I was happy about many of them. So, how do you feel about it in general?
I think I'm probably right there with you. Certainly, there were things that I would have liked to have seen win that didn't win, but I would also say that there were very few things that caused me to go, "Okay, that's just stupid." Mm-hmm. And those are sort of the winners that, as a rule, in your typical award show, cause me to begin to hate every moment. And you know, some years the Emmys can have like 5-10 winners who don't deserve to win and who are just ridiculous. You know, the Golden Globes almost always have 5-10 ridiculous, awful, stupid winners. And there was nothing last night, even something like Sherlock winning for limited movie, miniseries, whatever it won for, but it isn't. It didn't anger me. So there was no horrible speed bump that caused me to get derailed last night, and I was incredibly grateful for that.
Well, I got to say, you know, I thought the show was kind of all over the map in terms of, you know, just the execution of the show itself. I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a great job. I thought he was very funny, and there were a couple of missteps. There were a couple of jokes that didn't fly. I mean, the Bill Cosby thing just didn't work, and seemed just odd. And that was a mistake. But overall, I thought he kept things moving, and I liked his monologue at the beginning, and some of the bits that he did were genuinely funny. How did you feel about Kimmel?
The Bill Cosby thing was interesting because it was one of those moments that provided some insight into how little attention that crowd is actually paying to, to a lot of the show in general, certainly the commercial breaks, because there was some reaction that he was hoping to get that really didn't happen in the room. The room didn't hear or something, and so a lot of people on Twitter tried pretending that there was shock or horror, but there was almost nothing that the director was able to find to show us, so it felt like it missed, and it missed because the room was unaware that a joke had been made. Yeah. And I think that if the room had been aware, probably there would have been more nervous laughter or shock or horror or whatever. It just didn't play.
Yeah.
In general, though, I thought he did reasonably well. I thought the monologue was decent. I thought it was a little too short and could have dug a little bit deeper. I thought he was very good in the little between segments bits that sort of keep the show going along with a little humor. The Stranger Things people delivering peanut butter sandwiches, that was cute until you stopped and remembered exactly how many hosts have now done the exact same shtick, and it's probably a little, I would say, done. You know, you had, I guess it was Ellen with the pizza, and then Chris Rock with the Girl Scout cookies, and now this, it's just probably kill that bit.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one, that was the thing, Dan, where I was like, is this now a thing? at award, like when they pulled out the, it was nice to see the kids from Stranger Things, even though you didn't get to really even see them. But, you know, I was like, is this now going to be a bit now? And do we have to like thank Ellen for this? It just, you know.
Well, here's the thing about that. My colleague at THR, Mikey O'Connell, wrote a story today because he was stationed down by the bar for the entirety of the show, which initially seemed like it was going to be a good and kind of amusing gig. And then it turned out that apparently they shut off the booze at 4:30 and the food supply was very limited. And the way I look at it is it's entirely possible that these are people who indeed haven't eaten for a week in order to fit into their dresses and
right.
tuxedos.
Right, right.
And they're on the verge of passing out, and probably they do need a little bit of sugar to keep from having horrible things happen. And someone at some point realized that feeding them was actually a kind thing to do, but then it became a shtick, and no one's necessarily found a way to make it newly funny. So I think we've now killed this as a bit. Let's see what the next evolution of the make sure people don't have sugar crashes in the middle of the show thing is.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It's, you know, I will say this, though, that within that bit, I did think that the notes were funny. Anytime you can make a reference to Snow Dogs to Cuba Gooding is funny. And I thought the Amy Schumer is not Amy Poehler bit, I also thought that was funny. But I noticed in one of your tweets, you said it took a very, very long way to get that juice bit.
Yes, there was the passing out juice boxes so that he could get down to David Schwimmer and go, David, juice. Juice. And I think in the crowd, you know, maybe three people got the joke when it started, including David Schwimmer not getting it. And then by the time it was done, maybe 20 people got it, maybe 30, because again, people weren't paying attention. You're expecting a lot of that audience to expect them to pay attention to anything other than who wins and who loses. And there were a few things last night that I thought Kimmel tried getting the audience to go with him a little bit further than they were prepared to go at the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, for the people who didn't get the juice joke with Schwimmer, explain it.
Just that David Schwimmer's character in The People versus O.J. Simpson, you can go online and find many supercuts of him repeatedly referring to O.J. as Juice and Uncle Juice.
Right.
So, People versus O.J. Simpson reference, and maybe it's possible there was too much of that, given that it was in the opening filmed bit. There was O.J. humor. It was the first 2 minutes of the monologue. There was an awful lot of O.J. last night, and for some of us who love us some Fargo, maybe it was a little bit too much, just a little.
Well, no, we can get to we're going to get to that. I know that you were disappointed that Fargo got shut out, at the Emmys. But I was happy. There were so many things I was happy about. We can begin with the very first award. which, as you know, obviously, and people who listen to this show and listen to the segments with you, we have been championing this show, Baskets, since it's started. And you and I both adore Louis Anderson in it. And right out of the gate, I'm watching the show right out of the gate, first award, I went, oh, this is great. So were you surprised? As surprised as I was?
I was so surprised and so pleased because it was such a good way to start the show and such an optimistic point of beginning and point of entry into the program. Because if it had, you know, I love Tony Hale. Tony Hale's great. Tony Hale deserves all the awards. But if it had just been Tony Hale again, it would have been like, ho-hum, okay, another win for Tony Hale being very, very funny on Veep. Instead, Louis Anderson winning kind of said, okay, this is going to feel like a slightly different Emmy show. I was a little disappointed he didn't thank us in his speech. He had to thank his actual mother instead, and I guess that's a choice. You know, fine, Louis, whatever. We'll see if we talk you up as much next year. You know, whatever. But I was so happy.
Yeah, Yeah. I did not expect it at all. I just didn't. And when a show kicks off something, you know, like that, for me, it's the first award. It's the one guy that I was, not one guy, but one of the people that I was rooting for you know, really big time, thinking there was no way he was going to win, and that's how the show started. So I was in a happy mood after that. I really was.
And by some standards, one might say that things went downhill from there, but there were some, you know, some good moments in addition to things going downhill from starting at an absolute peak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was happy. Now, okay, let's talk a little bit about. There's so much stuff to talk about. What did you think about the Maggie Smith setup that Kimmel did, and then it paid off?
But it paid off in stupidness, and I'm sort of curious on things like that, and things like, I assume we can talk more about that either now or later, of the Matt Damon bit. Where you do an awful lot of preparation for something on the assumption that ... So I do wonder if the accountants let Kimmel and whatnot know that Maggie Smith was going to win later, and it became a setup to a punchline they knew was coming. I don't know. What was Matt Damon going to come out and talk with Jimmy about if Jimmy had actually won that award? Or was Jimmy so 100% sure he wasn't going to win that he was confident and had no plan B in case somehow he won?
Yeah, no, you know what? It does make you get Oliver Stone-ish. It really does, because, you know, especially the Matt Damon bit. You know, I mean, because the Maggie Smith thing was funny in the monologue, you know, and even if she didn't win, you still had that. You know what I mean? But but Matt Damon, who's like one of the biggest stars in the world, I mean, he wasn't scheduled to present or do anything. To have him show up, you know, I'm sure that, I mean, obviously, if you put Matt Damon on stage with Jimmy Kimmel, you'll get a couple of laughs because they've been doing that now for 10 years. But you're right about that. It's like, what's the big payoff going to be if you've got Matt Damon in the room and Kimmel actually won?
You know, I wonder if maybe he had, for example, an Oscar backstage and he was going to sort of whip out the Oscar and try to make Kimmel feel inferior with Oscar versus Emmy or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it you know, it played like a bit that was set up and planned only under one contingency,
right?
Even though there could have been some sort of strange world in which Kimmel could have won. I can't figure out how that would have been. Yeah, you know, whatever. It wouldn't have made much sense. Probably John Oliver was always winning, but there could have been a circumstance in which James Corden could have won, because he won something at the other show.
Right.
And he's kind of the heir apparent. But,
and he's the guy right now. He's the guy that everybody, he's the guy who's got all the buzz. We got a break, Dan, okay? Hang on.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is here, and we are recapping the Emmys because Dan is our TV critic and from The Hollywood Reporter, and we want to hear his views on it. And we're going to go down the winners and losers and talk more about the show. You can check out Dan and follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got the news coming up next, and then more TV talk, more Emmy talk after this. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. We're going to be talking about places and businesses that we used to go to, local places that aren't around anymore. They're closing down some Kmarts locally, and we're going to remember going to other places that don't exist anymore. So that's coming up later on. Right now, though, we're talking about TV and the Emmys. The Emmys were handed out on Sunday night. And we want to get our TV guy's thoughts on it. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, Dan Feinberg. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking about the Emmy Awards. And we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right. So let's see. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other winners that evening. Kate McKinnon winning for Saturday Night Live made me very happy. And I think she's great, and I think she deserved it, and it's been a banner year for her.
It certainly has, and it was probably the right time for one of those SNL actors to have a breakthrough of this kind. I mean, Amy Poehler had been nominated, and Tina Fey, and I guess I'm trying to think if Tina Fey was ever nominated as a cast member of SNL. Certainly Kristen Wiig was, and certainly Poehler was, and they didn't win. But regardless, they hadn't won in this category, but I don't know that any of those guys, even Wiig in her last season, was sort of as integral to the way that show runs as Kate McKinnon is at this point. So giving her that award and kind of rolling it in with everybody's recognition of how she stole all the scenes in Ghostbusters and all of that. I think it was a very good moment, and she seemed just darned grateful.
Yeah, she did. It was really fun and really cool speech and very funny. Of course, you know, the director cut to Amy Poehler and Tina Fey during like half of her speech, you know, which of course you're going to do.
As you would and as you should, and she's part of a recent strong through line of female stars on that show, and one that will probably continue to be even more so this season. So good on her, and yeah, I was happy for that. It seemed like the right time. It didn't seem like there was a clear other juggernaut, especially with Allison Janney having won the past two, so it wasn't really like Allison Janney needed another Emmy or anything.
Yeah.
So this was the right time for Kate McKinnon.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought they were going to give it to Allison Janney again, but that's just sort of, that's become the common thinking, and that's one of the things that I found refreshing about the Emmys this year. It was like, they could have gone the route that they go every year, but instead they're giving it to people, I mean, like Rami Malek and Tatiana Maslany, which were both, I think, surprises. I did not expect that at all, especially Tatiana Maslany. I did not expect that at all. I was obviously incredibly happy about it because she's amazing on the show, despite the fact that Kerry Russell was nominated as well. How did you feel about that, Best Actress in a Drama?
I felt like it was probably 2 to 3 years too late, but also still not in any way undeserved. So definitely for me, I would have given her that trophy 2 straight years in the show's first 2 seasons. To me, Orphan Black has gone fairly far off the rails as a cohesive sci-fi drama. And so I'm less enthusiastic about the show these days than I was when it started, but that doesn't mean that I'm less enthusiastic about her and her having this recognition for this show and that 8-pronged performance is so correct that I'm not going to worry about whether she got it necessarily the year she deserved it most. She deserved to have an Emmy for that performance. And good on the Emmy voters for recognizing it, even if they recognized it too late.
I agree. That's exactly how I feel. That's why when she won, I was completely startled because I just didn't expect it because they've been ignoring her performance for so many years. And I was like very happy about it.
I was also confused, as was she, by the strange way that Kiefer Sutherland attempted to pronounce her name. And I think I had the same 2-second pause that she had and everyone else had of trying to figure out who the heck's name Kiefer Sutherland had actually just read. It was very weird. It was I don't understand how you don't prepare for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
In case that happens.
Well, he didn't at least, I mean, he was close. He didn't pull a Travolta.
He didn't, but Travolta was just introducing a performer. He wasn't trying to make it clear for 6 actresses whose name he was attempting to read. So I knew that, for example, he didn't say Kerry Russell, and I guess I knew he didn't say Robin Wright, and then gradually my brain got around to processing whose name most likely sounded a little bit like whatever he had said. It was an odd blunder, but it ended up for the best, ultimately.
Yeah. Now, and I know what Kerry Russell's speech would have been.
Hi, I'm Kerry Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
That would have been her acceptance speech. I just had to play that, sorry.
I never begrudge you.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus wins again for Veep, and I got to say, good. You know, it's one of those times when the person that wins every year, there's a reason. Sometimes there's a reason why somebody wins every year, and Julie Louis-Dreyfus is phenomenal on Veep, and I think deserves every Emmy that she's won.
I think she does. Maybe next year it would be really great if the show was fantastic, but they didn't give her a single one episode that was as good as the episode in which the character's mother passed away this
right.
year, which was such a spectacular showcase for her that you could have just given her, you could have mailed her the trophy at that moment. There was no question. No one was going to worry about who the other contenders were. They were just other people who were sitting in the auditorium with her. She was always just going to win. And maybe next year it's going to be a great season, but she'll just give a performance that's kind of the same, and then someone else can come in and
yeah.
win. Because I wouldn't mind seeing someone else get some recognition there, But I'm also not going to say that they need to stop giving Julia Louis-Dreyfus Emmys until she stops being clearly the best person eligible for those Emmys. And this year she absolutely and completely and totally was. Yeah. So, yay. Yep.
And her speech was, you know, her speech was funny at first. And then when she said, you know, when she revealed that her father died 2 days before the awards ceremony, the audible gasps in the audience were I mean, you could hear the entire room just go, you know, and yeah, go ahead.
You know, you hate to put it as callously as she's a person who knows how to arc a speech, and she could have gotten up there and she could have started by talking about her father, and she could have, and it would have been powerful and everyone would have been astonished, but she didn't. She got up and she told jokes, and she sort of lured the audience in. It was you couldn't write that speech as brilliantly as she wrote it for maximum effect of all kinds. So yeah, no, you went from laughing to oh my gosh in 2 seconds. You know, powerful stuff, funny stuff, and, you know, also a well-deserved award. Not that she doesn't have 73 of them.
Yeah, that's true. Jeffrey Tambor winning for Transparent. I mean, obviously, again, in the monologue that was set up, you know, with Kimmel coming out and giving him the award.
It was, but how quickly we forget that Gael Garcia Bernal won the Golden Globe whenever that was, and there was the whole joke about how to lose to Jeffrey Tambor with grace or whatever, and that Jeffrey Tambor actually did lose an award for this performance. He's just won almost every other one of them, so... So yeah, no one was especially shocked by that. Right. And again, it's another performance that's good enough that you can't be excessively bitter about the fact that there are other good performances too that just aren't winning.
Right.
That's how it goes.
Right. Supporting actor in a drama series went to Ben Mendelsohn for Bloodline. Was that a surprise for you?
It was definitely a surprise. It was also a surprise for me because I haven't watched any of the second season of Bloodline at all. It was a Tim Goodman review at the Hollywood Reporter, so I didn't have to watch it then, and I haven't felt inclined to watch it subsequently. Ben Mendelsohn is great. And
yeah, so I was happy he won because Mississippi Grind last year. because I still just that performance still resonates with me unbelievably. And I love the guy in general, but I've never seen one episode of Bloodline. So
he was very good in the first season, so I know that that's the case. In that category, I have real concerns about Jonathan Banks never winning an award for his performance as Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And with every year that passes, I become more concerned. And in the years that he was losing to Aaron Paul for Breaking Bad, I felt like that was probably appropriate and okay, but he needs to win an award at some point for that performance, which is a great performance. And I don't want that performance to become another one of those Nick Offerman on Parks and Rec, Hugh Laurie on House, just one of those performances that never gets recognition, and so, or never gets a win, actually. And so I really thought in an ideal world, that would have been his win last night, and instead it was not. But
yeah,
maybe next year.
I actually expected Dinklage to get it. How many times has Dinklage won though?
He's won two, and so there was the question of if having Dinklage and Kit Harington nominated together, that split the category and allowed Mendelsohn to win in the same way that having Maisie Williams, Lena Headey, and whoever else was nominated in that category from Game of Thrones, they all split those awards. So, you know, you never can say for sure. I sort of have a hard time imagining that there were that many people who thought that Kit Harington deserved it to take it away from Peter Dinklage, who also didn't have his best season last year. So who knows? It's still an interesting category. And darn it, Jonathan Banks needs to win one at some point.
Yeah, he's great. All right, hang on a second, okay, Dan?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we are discussing the Emmys and TV talk. He joins us normally every other Thursday here on the show, every other Thursday morning, but we wanted to get him on after the Emmys to get his reaction. He is our TV guy and the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more Emmys and more TV right here on 720 WGN. Oh, yeah. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. All right, hope everybody's doing well on this morning. Two for Tuesday, send your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is my guest. We're talking Emmys, and he's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can check him out on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Bob.
I did want to say that, you know, after Louis Anderson won, which was, you know, one of the highlights, if not the highlight of the show, and it happened 5 minutes in. Then after that, they give Master of None an award. And I just was so happy about that. I didn't expect it to, I just did not expect it to win. And, I mean, you know, I thought Veep, one of the Veep episodes that was nominated was certainly going to get it. And then, boom, Masters of None wins, and Aziz Ansari and Alan Yang get up there. And Alan Yang spoke first, unfortunately, for Aziz Ansari.
I think Aziz Ansari knew that he was going to be presenting later, so I think he was probably okay with that. But also, they were in the early show portion of playing people off as much as they could in the hopes that the show wouldn't go long. And then by the end of the show, when the show was running short, I'm sure they wouldn't have minded having that speech back. But that's how it goes. I was happy there, and that was one that I probably might have guessed would be a Master of None win, because the did have all those episodes in the running, and having to choose between them, I'm sure that in that case actually really was a chore and probably did split some of the votes. And the parents episode of Master of None really was a very good episode. The Indians on TV episode might have gotten more press at the time, but I think a lot of critics, and myself included, felt like the parents' episode was the one that locked the show in for them, that Master of None had a good pilot, but then the parents' episode basically said, okay, here's what the show really is.
Yeah.
How this show is a show that no other show on TV could be. And so, yeah, I was very happy with that, and very happy with Alan.
Yeah, I love the long duck dong mention and the please buy your kids cameras instead of violins. I thought that was just very funny.
It was very good, and it was part of the ongoing theme of the night, which involved just giving voices to people who haven't always traditionally had voices in Hollywood, and so, you know, Asian American voices, there aren't enough of them on TV, and it was good to get a call for those, and it was good to have Jill Soloway continuing to give a call for trans voices, for, you know, quote-unquote toppling the patriarchy, et cetera. You know, there were points being made last night by a lot of people,
I
think.
Let's talk about the structure of the show itself. You were talking about how they were cutting people off pretty early on. And then, like, the show was really oddly structured. There were times when it got to the point where there was no banter between presenters. The presenters didn't make any kind of speeches. They just went out and rattled off the nominees. They were inconsistent in showing clips for the nominees. You pointed that out in the piece that you wrote, Dan.
Yeah, that was very bad, because, you know, if you're going to maybe show clips for one set of nominees and not show clips for another, maybe separate them by a couple segments and don't do literally the same segment where the male actors in a drama get clips and the female actors in a drama don't. That's just not, and then don't have the show suddenly be basically running short just 10 minutes later. You know, it wasn't that much longer that Larry David came out and was just basking in the applause and was sort of stumbling along going, oh, look, here I am, I'm presenting at the Emmys. And you just knew that he had been told to spin his wheels and to, you know, pull wool or whatever it is that we tell comics to do to basically fill dead air. And all I could think was, huh, well, people could have actually seen clips of Tatiana Maslany doing all 8 of her performances, and then they would have understood how she won that award and stuff. Yeah, I don't get how that happens, except that you can't tell. You're in the moment, and if you're the producer of the show, sure you can tell instantly, okay, Louis Anderson is going long. I can tell that. And he was. Louis Anderson's speech was long. So, okay, you play him off. And then the next speech is a little bit long, and you go, okay, uh-oh, now I can tell the show's going long. Where do I start trimming? But then you start trimming, and suddenly Maggie Smith doesn't show up, and that's no speech at all. So then you go, uh-oh, wait, I just gained 2 minutes. And then Ben Mendelsohn shows up, and you gain 2 more minutes.
Yeah.
It's a really hard job, and I would never say that it's not a hard job. I just don't remember the last time it was quite so evident, as you say, the banter that suddenly vanished. There were a long stretch of presenters. No banter. Well, the banter was written. It just got cut out of the show.
Right.
All of those categories, there were clips for all of those categories, but some of them got pulled entirely. Some of them didn't. So there was a lot of watching as Don Mischer, who's the producer and has produced basically every Emmy telecast for decades, you could see him moving the pieces around in ways that I don't know you have been able to in every year.
Yeah. All right, the O.J. train. We need to talk about the O.J. train. The only major award it didn't win was directing, and that's because I think, like we had mentioned before, it was one of those deals where the three separate directors that got nominated maybe canceled themselves out.
But then why didn't Noah Hawley win for Fargo at that point? I you know, it was always inevitable that once Fargo and OJ were in the same categories, once FX didn't blink and move Fargo to drama series, where it probably would have won at least a few awards here and there, it was always inevitable that OJ was going to win big. And as someone who preferred Fargo over OJ, but also still liked OJ quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
I would have liked for a couple wins for Fargo over the course of the night. You know, I thought it was going to be Jean Smart, but then it wasn't. Then it was Regina King. Well, Regina King's always great, and I'm not going to say don't give Regina King awards, but, oh, man, Jean Smart was great, and that would have been a chance to honor Fargo.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the time, and it had to be one OJ win after another, and at least I was happy for all the actors who won from OJ, because it was so clear how much they all loved each other and how much they were all loving the moment. So you had the sort of back and forth of Sterling K. Brown and Sarah Paulson kind of trying to outdo each other in their praise for each other. You had Courtney B. Vance shouting out to Angela Bassett in the audience.
Yeah.
There were a lot of great moments with those guys.
Yeah. I have to say that, you know, I wasn't surprised by the wins. I was thrilled that that Sterling Brown won. Thrilled. And because, again, I expected them to go old school and give it to Travolta, who obviously did not deserve it. But the fact that they gave it to him, and I love that he said, a lot of you don't know who I am, but you checked the box anyway. I thought was very funny, and all of them gave a great speech. And there's the thing about Courtney B. Vance is I guess I'm realizing this now. There's a lot of Johnny Cochran in him, unless he was pulling out the Cochran for the speeches.
I think it was both.
Yeah,
I think he is a big personality. I think he was also doing the big personality in the presentation, and I think also he was the last of that group.
Yeah,
he had seen the degree of emotional effusiveness that both Sarah Paulson and Sterling K. Brown had shown. And so I definitely think there was a game of one-upsmanship at that point, that he knew what his co-stars had done. And so he went up there and he gave a bit of a show. And he's absolutely a guy capable of taking over the stage, if required, because he's also a Tony winner. Yeah, it was a good moment for him, but definitely there was some hamming that he was doing, and why not? You know, how often are you going to have that moment to be in the middle of that kind of awards juggernaut?
Yeah,
and to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Nick DiGilio and 720 WGN.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say?
Cubs baseball.
Hey, it's Kerry Wood. I talk playoff baseball with Rokan every Thursday afternoon at 4:40.
It's in our DNA.
Catch it all on WGN.
Go Cubs.
On 720 WGN.
Imagine that this is the sound of credit card fraud. It's just one part of identity theft. Add in someone opening a new cell phone account in your name. Someone buying or renting properties in your name. Or filing fake tax returns in your name. And you begin to understand that identity theft is more than just credit fraud. At LifeLock, we use proprietary technology to detect a wide range of identity threats. And if you have a problem, one of our U.S.-based specialists will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But with LifeLock, identity theft becomes a little less ominous. Now you can get 10% off. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code LIFELOCK.
Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell and Steve Cochran at 6 right here on WGN. We're going to be talking about places that we used to love to go to, businesses that we used to go to that don't exist anymore. They're shutting down some Kmarts around locally. And I wanted to talk about places that we remember going to when we were younger that aren't there anymore. And we'll reminisce a little bit about that and talk about those times. And again, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And Two for Tuesday is upon us. And if you want to make some requests for Two for Tuesday, do that right now too. 312-981-7200. We're talking TV and specifically the Emmys with Dan Feinberg, who joins us usually biweekly every Thursday morning, but wanted to get him on in the special morning just to cover the Emmys. And Dan, we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right, the two big awards at the end of the night, you got your comedy series, which went to Veep, and your drama series, which went to Game of Thrones. Now, let's start with comedy. Any surprise there? Did you think Veep was going to get it?
I think I definitely thought that Veep was going to get it. It was a great season for Veep, and it was a great season for Veep that also had that narrative of everybody briefly worrying if the show was going to sound the same when Armando Iannucci left the show. Would it still have that voice? Would everybody still swear in as funny ways with David Mandel as the showrunner? And the answer to that question was, why, yes. And if anything, it would be possibly funnier, possibly better. I'm not going to say necessarily it was its best season ever, but it could have been. And that alone was enough, given that it had already won last year. But it was an inevitable victory, and good for them. You don't see that happen very often, to see a show win one year, have its showrunner decide to depart, and then win the next year with a different guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that just goes to show how well-run a machine Veep has become and how talented the people involved are.
True.
So, not at all.
And again, HBO wins yet again in the best drama series for Game of Thrones. Any surprise there?
I would say no as well, especially since when it won last year, for its worst season by a large margin, and this season was absolutely, definitely a better season. So I figured it was a sure thing. HBO knows how to play the game. Now, somewhat shockingly, HBO actually lost an award that they clearly should have won, going back again to Sherlock winning for a TV movie, which it wasn't. HBO had two very heavily promoted, stunted TV movies in Confirmation and All the Way, the LBJ movie. And the fact that HBO couldn't get that award is a bit of a shocker, actually, but that Game of Thrones won was no shocker. Just as I would have liked to have seen OJ make a little bit of room for Fargo, I certainly would have liked to have seen The Americans get an actual breakthrough there and win for writing or win for directing or, well, honestly, win for Matthew Reese or Kerry Russell. A little bit disappointed that didn't happen. But on the other hand, next year, Game of Thrones and the Emmys, so maybe that means it will be the American theater.
Yeah, okay. Before we get, I want a couple of things about, you know, just regular TV that I want to get to before we let you go. But I just did want to mention another highlight for me was Key and Peele finally winning for best variety sketch, whatever the hell they call it, whatever the hell the category is. And it was great. I mean, you know, I was just very happy, and it was their last season. I mean, did they finally get it? Because I guess the Emmy voters were like, it's their final season. Let's finally give it to these guys.
I think so, yeah. I think last year, certainly in that category, the narrative was so completely and totally all about Amy Schumer, basically. And this year, the Amy Schumer hype had died down to some degree. There wasn't the same, quote-unquote, need to give her that award. And there was more of a need to say, okay, We feel a little bit bad that you haven't won anything in your various years, TNPL here. I liked how excited Tegan Michael Key was when he realized they were getting the award from Damon Wayans.
Yeah.
I thought that was nice.
Yeah, that was nice. That really was. It really was nice. I mean, he referred to him as Damon Wayans Jr., but which was all.
He got a little bit confused, as you would in that moment, but I liked that they got to have that symmetry there.
Yeah. And, you know, just even in the speech that they had to give, and, you know, at this point, you know, you got to do like, you got 25 seconds to give a speech or whatever it is. You know, they both work so well together, even in a moment like that. It's just, I just love watching those guys work together. I mean, it's just a joy to watch those two guys. It really is.
They are extremely talented, and they deserve this win. They deserve to go out on top like this.
Yeah. Okay. Now, will you be waiting with bated breath for the Big Brother finale on Wednesday?
I will probably be watching it. I'm trying to think of who I'm rooting for. I guess I'm rooting for Paul.
Yeah.
I applaud Paul for the effort that he has had to put in to get where he got.
Yeah.
Because he could have been a target really from the very first moment, and I think he navigated those waters extremely well and probably more impressively than the other contenders.
Yeah, tomorrow night. I mean, I am rooting for Paul. There's no question about it. Now, the last time we spoke, you had not watched the last Wednesday's episode.
Oh my God, the stuff that happened in the jury.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh God, because Paulie is just so horrible. And I needed there to be more slapping or physical confrontation but suddenly seeing the producers in the background and the camera people, it was one of those moments where suddenly all of the pretense goes away and you realize what sloppy messes humanity truly is.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. It was definitely crazy. And even though you told me that I needed to expect something was coming in the jury house, I did not truly expect what unfolded.
Okay, good. I'm glad I didn't ruin it for you.
No, you did not. It lived up to whatever it was that you brought.
Because I was just kind of astounded by what I was watching. And like you said, Dan, as soon as the crew and the producers come busting out of the room, I was like, man, something crazy is going on here.
what a mess. And you know that the producers are already trying to figure out a way to work Paulie into next summer season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That he's just the kind of drama that I'm sure they love.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tomorrow night is also the premiere. Wednesday night is also the premiere. If you watch the Emmys, you got to see this commercial 50 million times of Designated Survivor. You talked a little bit about it in the past. Can you remind everybody what you thought of it, and how do you think it's going to do tomorrow?
I think it's going to do reasonably well. I think that ABC has had a lot of potential platforms to promote it and has promoted it relentlessly in those platforms.
I do want to mention, Dan, you know, the last few times I've gone to a movie theater, that Maria Menounou thing, that the first look thing, there is a Designated Survivor segment every single time I go see a movie now.
Yeah, they're pushing it hard. I watch college football every Saturday, and on ABC, the college football, every other ad basically has been for Designated Survivor. And that's largely because they think that the college football audience, you know, whether or not I agree with it or not, they think it's a male skewing audience, and they think that of their available shows, that's the one that's closest to male skewing, and thus they keep showing ads for that and not for something like the horrible, horrible Notorious, which premieres on Thursday night, which is really not human skewing. So, but that's a different thing. It's awful. Designated Survivor is significantly better. It's not great. It really isn't. It's Kiefer Sutherland is great, and there's a lot of show around him that is not there yet. Mm. There's the Kiefer Sutherland plot, but then there are all of these satellite subplots, and there might be six or seven subplots going around Kiefer, and of them, one maybe works. So you watch it because Kiefer Sutherland is a TV star, and he knows how to do this, and he's great. the rest of the show around him, you kind of hope that in future weeks it will live up to his level, because there are a lot of good actors in it. You just want them to actually have things to do, you know.
Yeah.
Maggie Q is great. Anyone who watched Nikita knows that. But she's not great here yet. Maybe eventually she will be. Maybe eventually Cal Penn will be interesting, et cetera. But, you know, Kiefer Sutherland's really good.
Okay.
And so definitely of the new fall shows, there are like only four or five that I would actually actively recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd actively recommend that. I would just tell people not to get their hopes
okay.
really high.
Now, you know, we got about a minute left. What are the other ones that you would recommend? Because a lot of the premieres are happening now. You know, all of the premieres are coming up. What are the three or four that you said that you liked?
If you go into it looking at it as a schmaltzy underdog sports movie as a TV show, I think Pitch is really effective. If you go into it as kind of a family weepy, I think that NBC's This Is Us is really effective. It premiered already. It premiered on Monday night. The Good Place, I think it's really good, and I've seen a few subsequent episodes. It stays consistently funny, and Kristen Bell is great.
And that they're showing three episodes in 1 week of that.
They are, yeah. They started it with two on Monday, and then one in its later slot, in its actual time slot later. So that, and then I would say that ABC's Speechless, which might not premiere until next week, I think it's worth watching as well. Minnie Driver's great, and it's another good ABC family comedy. So
okay.
There's four or five network shows that are probably worth watching, and then there's a lot that aren't.
Yeah, and the Good Place is on my DVR. I plan on watching it.
Yeah,
I happen
to watch it. We'll talk about it next time I'm on.
Absolutely.
I think it's really sharp.
Yeah, and I am a huge Kristen Bell fan. I just love her, and anytime she gets to do something and it centers around her, it makes me happy. So
it's a great vehicle for her, it really is.
That's great. All right, Dan, we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Looking forward to it, and always a pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Dan Feinberg, everybody, who normally joins us. He'll join us a week from Thursday for his regular visit. He joins us biweekly on Thursday mornings, but we wanted to have him in special for the Emmys. And you can read him at The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Kmart's being closed down and some of the older businesses that we used to go to that we miss. And we'll reminisce a little bit about that coming up. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.